This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, a report on Michigan's child welfare system shows wide racial disparities. But first, Western Michigan University political science professor Paul Clements is trying to move from studying and writing about public policy to making it. Clements is the Democratic candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th District, challenging longtime Representative Fred Upton. Paul Clements, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
And we're also joined by Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Let's begin, Paul, by having you introduce yourself to the audience and give a brief description of your background and why you're running for Congress.
Sure. Well, I've been teaching a national economic development strategies here at Western Michigan University for 18 years. I helped to start our evaluation doctoral program, and I've worked all over the world on improving the efficiency of government and nonprofit programs. My wife is a librarian. Our two daughters went to Kalamazoo Public Schools. My mom, my sister live here. We're very active in our church community, many ways in the community. We really come to love Kalamazoo. It's been a very supportive community for our children. We love West Michigan. And in the 18 years that I've been here, I've noticed that our Congressman Upton, has really changed, that he used to be a moderate, but in the last few years, he's gone along with some of the most extreme elements of our political dialogue. I think we can see that particularly clearly with the Ryan budget that he voted for last month. I hope we have a chance to talk about that. And I think that, you know, the people, I've been campaigning now for over a year, and what I hear more often than anything is Mr. Upton has changed. He's not representing our values here in Southwest Michigan at this time. And I think I can do a better job than he is in promoting the kind of America that we want for our future.
Yvonne?
Paul, on your campaign website, you describe climate change as the biggest problem facing Michigan and the rest of the world. Can you talk a little bit about why you feel that way and what steps you feel need to happen to change things?
Sure. I would certainly say that climate change is the biggest environmental problem facing Michigan. It really seriously threatens our Great Lakes, our agriculture, our tourism. In terms of the overall issues in Michigan, I think jobs and the economy are absolutely fundamental. But yes, climate change is the issue that got me into running this race. Because our congressman, this is one of the issues where I think he's really, you know, frankly sold out. He used to say that we need to take action on climate change. Then he got promoted to chair of House Energy and Commerce Committee, the very committee in Congress that has responsibility for energy policy, which is climate policy. And he did a 180-degree turn. He's passed a bill through the House to remove the EPA's authority to regulate greenhouse gases. We're on our way with present policy towards climate chaos, and I really care about that.
Congressman Upton has consistently said that he favors an all-of-the-above strategy for energy. What's wrong with an all-of-the-above strategy, which would include things, for instance, like nuclear power and, you know, perhaps increased drilling for oil?
You know, we've built our current American prosperity on fossil fuels, and that's not a bad thing. But now we've learned that fossil fuels have a byproduct, you know, carbon, that warms the planet, and that if we keep going with our present strategy, it'll be, as I've already mentioned, it'll be hurting our Great Lakes, our agriculture, our tourism, our forests, our wildlife. It's not just here in West Michigan, but around the world, we're going to be needing to transition towards clean energy solutions, largely solar and wind, but also I think we need a gradual transition from other dirty polluting fuels. I don't see the solution in nuclear, but we need to move in a careful, cautious, step-by-step way towards this kind of clean energy future.
Yvonne?
You mentioned jobs. What are your plans to create the kinds of well-paying middle-class jobs that seem to be evaporating these days?
Sure. You know, I've been teaching national economic development strategies for 18 years. And your question is a big question. I hope we have a chance to get into several aspects of it. But certainly, those industrial countries that have had rapid economic growth have had a strong government working with a strong private sector to build the technologies that will support those manufacturing products that will have increasing demand in the future. And again, clean energy, high-tech manufacturing is, I think, going to continue to be the basis for prosperity. We need to be rebuilding manufacturing in Michigan and around the United States, both in terms of government investment and also in terms of our regulatory environment.
How would you go about, if you had the opportunity, improving the Affordable Care Act or, in general, the healthcare system in the United States?
You know, I certainly agree that we need to be moving towards greater access and lower cost in healthcare. One of the things that with the Affordable Care Act that it addresses, it begins to address the question of access, but it doesn't address the long-term problem of increasing inflation in healthcare costs. And this is actually the biggest driver of America's deficit. There are a lot of ways in which we can get better quality healthcare, supporting the dignity of the patient, and yet at lower cost. Other countries have done this, we can do it too. And that's certainly an area that I would hope to focus on.
How do you increase access to care and hold down costs, and yet at the same time not diminish the quality of care that people receive now, at least people who are satisfied with the quality of care they receive?
Sure. One thing that the Affordable Care Act does, which I think is really important, is it increases the focus on prevention. Prevention and positive health, and then that reduces healthcare costs down the road. But there are also specific areas, such as post-traumatic care, particularly for elderly people, where the evidence tells us that with better management after someone gets out of the hospital, that we can give the patient greater choice, they can have greater dignity, and we can also reduce costs.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Paul Clements. He is a candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. He is planning to challenge longtime Republican Representative Fred Upton in November. Also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
Speaking of healthcare, obviously in the last couple of weeks, we've heard about veterans not receiving the kind of care that they need. How would you go about addressing that issue?
You know, I have spent the last 20 years working on improving evaluation systems in public and nonprofit organizations. For veterans not to get the care they need to address their health concerns is just unacceptable. Certainly, we need to have, you know, better, I will say, monitoring evaluation systems in our public institutions, such as the VA system. And I am an expert in that.
Do you think Congress is perhaps lacking in the role of being a watchdog? You know, not just in this particular VA case, but during the Bush administration, there were plenty of problems at Walter Reed Hospital that we found out about after, you know, many problems there. Does Congress need to do a better job of being the watchdog that keeps its eye on the administration and making sure that it's evaluating and doing its job correctly?
You know, one of my real disappointments in our Congress and in Congressman Upton is it has become so much more political in the last few years. We've seen with the Affordable Care Act, you know, whatever your opinion on it, to vote to defund it over 40 times when there are serious issues like the VA system and the medical services for our veterans that we need to be focusing on is just, not serving our country. I think our Congress has gone in the wrong direction. It's broken. I think our present congressman is frankly part of that. And we need to get back to focusing on the practical day-to-day problems, solving problems for the American people.
Does that mean that you sitting here as a Democrat running for Congress will say that if it's a Democratic president and there are problems in the administration, I'm going to raise my voice when I find it necessary, regardless of party? Is that what you're saying?
You bet I will. There are plenty of things about, my party. There are plenty of proposals from President Obama, of his programs, that I've disagreed with. And I've spoken against them as a citizen, and I would certainly speak against them as a congressman.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. When the big banks helped to crash our economy in 2008, we had a financial rescue policy. The way that financial rescue policy worked was it was very kind to the big banks that crashed our economy, and it frankly didn't do enough to rebuild jobs for working people. At that time, you and I, the taxpayer, we bailed out the banks because they were too big to fail. Okay, you know, I studied with Ben Bernanke, was my advisor. I know economics. It was right. They were too big to fail. We would have had a worse recession if we hadn't solved that problem. But guess what? A few years later now, we have four banks that again have assets equal to 60% of the U.S. economy, once again too big to fail. They once again have an implicit insurance policy from you and me, the taxpayer, and President Obama has done nothing about that.
Yvonne?
You mentioned earlier you think that higher education needs to be more affordable. How would you go about doing that?
Well, I think that the major way that the federal government can do that is through low-interest student loans. This is something where my opponent, Mr. Upton, has voted to reduce Pell Grants, which I think is going absolutely in the wrong direction. We give these big banks, we've been giving them loans at 0.25% interest, where our students are often paying 6, 7, 8, 9% interest for their student loans. I teach here at the university. There are so many students who are graduating loaded up with debt, so they can't get their lives started. I think lower interest student loans would be a big part of the solution. If a graduate is going into an area of public service where there just aren't enough people with the qualifications, maybe there should be some kind of loan forgiveness in those circumstances.
You mentioned earlier that you wanted to talk some about the Ryan budget. Give us your assessment. What's wrong with it, and what's an alternative to the Ryan budget that would reduce the deficit and still not restrict the economy too greatly?
Sure. You know, I believe that the best days for America and our democracy lie ahead of us, but that in order to achieve our potential, we need a strong government, a strong middle class. The Ryan budget goes exactly in the wrong direction. We've been seeing the increasing gap between the super rich and the middle class and the poor. The Ryan budget, it cuts Medicare, it cuts Medicaid, it reopens that donut hole, it cuts vital education programs and technology programs, investing in the kind of manufacturing that we've already talked about to rebuild our economy. It cuts taxes on millionaires, but it would have to raise taxes on like a family of four, an average family, by about $2,000 to achieve the deficit reduction targets that we're looking at. I think that one of the biggest challenges facing our country is that the super rich and big corporations have often been able to tilt the playing field in their favor through their influence on government, through getting big tax loopholes and subsidies, and we can have significant cuts there. We've already discussed that there are ways to make healthcare both more efficient and more effective. I think we certainly need to be doing that.
Yvonne?
Paul, you're running against, obviously, a longtime veteran. And this is your first political race. How do you feel you're getting your message out, and what are the challenges in going up against someone who has been, you know, representing Southwest Michigan since the 80s?
Yeah, Mr. Upton, he's been there for 28 years, but certainly I've been campaigning now for 16 months, and what I hear time and time again from the voters of this district is that he's changed. There was a poll last year, last October, where he was one of the most vulnerable Republicans in the House of Representatives. One advantage that I have from prior Democrats is before now, the Democrats frankly haven't started early enough and haven't raised the resources to get their message out. And in our politics, you have to do that. In the last decade, the other Democrats haven't started before April of the election year. I started 14 months earlier than that. I've had a chance to speak with many different groups, Rotary clubs, farmers, teachers, Democrats, also Republicans, county fairs, many, many times in each of the six counties of the district already. And I'm getting a very good response to my message.
Going back, though, looking at midterm election years, which is what we have here, we're not in a presidential year. In those years, Fred Upton has topped 60% pretty consistently. He was held to 54% by Mike O'Brien in 2012, but President Obama was at the top of the ticket, winning Michigan pretty convincingly. Do you have more of a headwind than Mike O'Brien had 2 years ago as you try to unseat Representative Upton?
Certainly. There's no question about that. Again, I started much earlier in the cycle than he did. My campaign has already dramatically exceeded his total fundraising for his entire campaign. But I think more importantly than that is what I said before, and that is that, you know, Mr. Upton has gradually, but in the last few years, increasingly changed his politics. He's lined up with really extreme elements of our current political discourse, and the voters see that. And that really gives, you know, I think that I can represent a positive vision for the middle class, for our economy, for our environment. And I think that gives me a real opportunity.
You do acknowledge, though, you will be outspent considerably.
You know, in the last decade, Mr. Upton has outspent his opponents 10 or 20 to 1. In the last election, he's one of only 66 people in the House and the Senate who got over half of their contributions from outside their home state. In recent elections, the Democrat hasn't had the time or the money to get their message out. I'm building the kind of campaign where we're going to do that. We will have the resources to get my message out. And I'm confident that, you know, I think that people may very well decide to place their trust in me to represent them.
Do you think you will get money from outside the state? And are you asking for it?
Certainly.
And is it necessary in order to run a competitive campaign that outside groups do fund you to some extent?
You know, in our American political system, you know, if I'm elected, I'll be elected to the National Congress. I have had contributions from friends from outside the state. I expect that I will, as time goes on, get some contributions from other organizations outside the state. But the overwhelming majority of my contributions have been from individuals within the district, unlike the situation with Mr. Upton.
Paul Clements, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Paul Clements is a candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District, running for the seat currently held by Republican Fred Upton. He's also a professor of political science at Western Michigan University. And thanks again to Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A new report finds very different outcomes in Michigan's child welfare system depending on race. The Michigan Race Equity Coalition in Child Welfare and Juvenile Justice prepared the report. Paul Elam, Director of Safety and Justice for Public Policy Associates, was the report's project manager. Tell us what this report shows. Give us some of the highlights or perhaps maybe the concerning points of things that should get our attention about the child welfare system in Michigan.
Public Policy Associates has been working in partnership with the State Court Administrative Office, the Department of Human Services, and Casey Family Programs for the last 3 years, looking at disproportionate minority contact in our child welfare and juvenile justice system. The coalition was brought about based on a charge from Director Maura Corrigan to look at issues of fairness and equity for kids and families in the state of Michigan. And Public Policy Associates was the contractor and project manager for that work and established a statewide data set that the coalition could actually review to look at key decision points in our child welfare and juvenile justice systems to assess disproportionality. And over the course of that 3-year period, we were able to assemble a 4-year trend analysis report that looked at all 83 counties at these key decision points. And at a high level, what the report found is that youth of color, specifically African-American youth, were more likely to be investigated for abuse or neglect, were more likely to be removed from their homes based on investigations, and then were more likely to age out of the system upon removal from their home. And the coalition is really interested in making sure that decisions that are being made are not due to disparate treatment, And so there's a difference in disproportionate treatment and disparate treatment. We believe that disparate treatment is the result of decision makers making unfair decisions based on race and ethnicity. And that's not what our report points out. It really points out disproportionality, that there's an overrepresentation. And so the coalition is now in a position to determine if that disproportionality is due to disparate treatment or if it's explainable by some other factors or key conditions that exist within the communities that were highlighted in the report.
So when kids go through the foster care system and then they age out, what is the cost to them? What does that mean for them going forward? And what does it mean for a cost to society in a broader sense?
Well, I think the cost to the child, him or herself, and their family is not really launching kids and the positive trajectory that we would like them to. Unfortunately, we have many kids who grow up in impoverished conditions, in neighborhoods or family units where they don't have access to the developmental needs that we think all kids should have to actually thrive and become adults who can contribute positively to society. And so I think the whole notion of having a child welfare system to help in those instances is great. But I think far too often when we look at the programs and policies that are in place, they tend to be underfunded. They tend not to be evaluated. When we do find things that are working, we tend not to do enough of it. We tend not to make those resources available in counties, cities, neighborhoods, communities that actually need those resources. And we've got to do a better job in trying to help these youth. And so I think in summary, we have a large group of youth who become disconnected youth. They're not in school. They dropped out of school. They're not contributing productively to our economy. They're not employed. They're not seeking higher education and becoming a part of our higher learning system. And they become disconnected. They're not contributing, and therefore they become consumers, quote unquote, of our system's resources. And every kid that's a consumer versus a contributor, I think, helps create a system that we really don't envision. That's not what the child welfare system was developed for. And so we need to make sure that we're coming to the table with the appropriate leaders, elected officials, many of our philanthropic partners, developing public-private partnerships to help wrap our head around how we can produce better outcomes.
Are there states which could serve as a role model for Michigan? This can't be a problem only in Michigan, so I'm wondering if you've looked at some other states and if you found systems out there that Michigan could try to emulate.
Yes. One of the reasons we're partnering with Casey Family Programs is because they are connected with pretty much every state looking at these issues of disproportionality in state's child welfare systems. They launched a national partnership with the Center for the Study of Social Policy a few years back, and Michigan was one of the sites that came in and partnered with them to do a institutional analysis. We did it in County and Saginaw County. And as we did that work here, Casey Family Programs was able to bring lessons learned from other states as we did that work. And I think what we're seeing in some cases is as we struggle with issues here in Michigan, they're able to point us to experiences, lessons learned from other states. Some of that work has come directly out of the state of Texas, for example, where as we thought about solutions and strategies here in Michigan or ways to develop coalitions or prior reports that looked at some of these same issues, they're bringing that learning into our collaborative or coalition that we've started here in Michigan to help us as we go through this work.
The CETA Scholars Program here at Western Michigan University has been recognized in many quarters for helping students after they age out of foster care to have success in college. And I'm wondering if you look at a program like that and see that perhaps there's some things in it that could also be gleaned to for other parts of foster care that could help students in other situations, maybe not just those going to college or a university.
Yeah, I think that's a great program. I haven't seen an evaluation of it myself. I've been exposed to it, talked to participants, you know, students who participated in that program. In fact, in some of our reentry work, we work with youth who have been released from juvenile justice systems and placed in the CETA program, and really see it as an opportunity to get back on a positive trajectory. I mentioned earlier that when kids age out, if they don't have a system to connect with, there's unfortunately a system waiting to pull them in, the juvenile justice system, our adult correction system, and the like. And so if we can create systems like the CETA Scholars Program that says we are waiting for you to age out, I think that's the direction we want to move in, where we can help continue to provide supports and even expose youth to higher education opportunities to prepare them for a career path in a conventional manner. I think some of the things we're looking at as we make our recommendations as a coalition reflect that as well. And so we've made recommendations in three key areas, not only programming, but systems change, but also training. I think we call it a three-pronged approach. We need programs like the CETA Scholars Initiative, but we also need practitioners and caseworkers and managers and leaders of those systems to come to the table with a new frame of thought, and we call that systems change. We have to change how we do business day in and day out if we want to produce different outcomes for our youth and families who get connected with the child welfare system. If we do the same thing and expect a different outcome, then I think we're fooling ourselves. And then we need formal training to help sustain those systems changes, and we also need some shifts in policy. And so I would argue that we need great programs like the CETA program, but we also need to add to that some training and policy change and some systems change efforts to help sustain that over time, so that we can shift some of the numbers that we're seeing in this report that we released.
So what are the next steps?
At the state level, what we plan to do is continue our work. And so we shared some of our high-level key recommendations. We're now going to move into work groups where we begin to operationalize those recommendations. And so if they're training recommendations, how do we get this training embedded in the state's training system, and how do we roll it out into jurisdictions? And so that's where a demonstration and pilot site become very helpful to help us think about the nuances and logistics, and then think about taking things to scale. If they're policy recommendations, then there'll be groups who kind of lead that work and have conversations with key thought leaders. And then if they're programmatic recommendations, it's really thinking about the funding and targeting using GIS technology, where these programs are most needed. Where do we see the disproportionality? Where do we see it at its highest rate? How do we target that to hopefully mitigate it and reduce it over time? And really bringing the coalition members back together periodically, annually, biannually, to look at the data to see if we're actually achieving the reduction in disproportionality that we see. And so the coalition will continue to meet. It will continue to do its work. And it's not easy work. I think the structure that will play that role will be established over the next couple of months. And that will be the next rollout that we ultimately share with the public. Now that you see these recommendations, here's how we're going to structure ourselves to do something about it.
Paul Elam, thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to getting back on the phone with you to tell you about how some of this work has rolled out over time.
Paul Elam is with Public Policy Associates. He is the project manager of a new report showing racial disparities in Michigan's child welfare system. And now a programming note. West Southwest is moving and expanding. Beginning next week, you can hear West Southwest twice a week, Monday and Thursday mornings at 9:20. During the months of June and July, we'll be hearing extensively from the candidates in contested primaries for State House, Senate, and Congress in Southwest Michigan. You can find more details at wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.